Welcome to Recovery Rocks, where we talk about all things recovery and music. I'm Tawny.
And I'm Lisa, and we're really glad you're here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. It is Lisa, and I am here, as always, with my favorite,
Tawny.
Today, we're going to talk about a topic that is near and dear to my heart, because it's where a lot of my work now is focused, which is the workplace and being a sober person in an unsober world in the workplace. And this topic came to us from one of our listeners. Giant shout out to Andy for bringing this to us, because it was he makes so many good points about, you know, this being an issue and that we need to talk about it on the pod. And sometimes I feel like I talk about it so much in my work life that I forgot about it, you know, when we pod. But basically, I think I want to focus it a little bit on, you know, the culture of workplaces. And, you know, my particular experience is within law firms in the legal world. And I always say that the legal profession is soaked in alcohol, because it is, like, everything around, you know, entertaining clients, marketing to clients, recruiting new attorneys. You know, you file a big brief and everybody goes to the bar to, you know, celebrate. You close a deal and there's a massive closing dinner that is featured with all kinds of fancy wine. And that's the thing. And there is a very kind of work hard, play hard ethic, meaning I can work until 10 o'clock at night, go out to the bar until 2 a.m. and then be at my desk at, you know, 9 a.m, bright eyed and bushy tailed. And it's so dangerous. It's so dangerous. It is also, I know that the law firm world is not the only place where we see this. It is in all kinds of professions and all kinds of industries. It's, you know, I mean, financial services, you could, like, investment banks, you look at advertising, you could look at tech, anything really can lend itself to this kind of alcohol-centric culture. And one of the things that has been a challenge, I think, you know, it's really poked its head up like a bear during the pandemic, because people are, there has been, at least we know in the legal profession, a big increase in drinking, people relieving or trying to de-stress through alcohol. We have surveys done on it that show the numbers. They're atrocious. Like, people are self-medicating their anxiety, their depression, their isolation, all those things with alcohol. And we have a very unaware or insensitive management culture in most places. So for instance, I have a friend in recovery in California, and, you know, there's been a lot of talk in the HR world and in the professional development and among all the people running law firms and in management about the need to, you know, kind of de-emphasize alcohol. It really took a big, got a big boost. Sadly, it took the Me Too movement for law firms to realize, like, hey, when we seem to have these horrible Me Too incidents, there seems to be alcohol all the time. So maybe we need to be looking at that. So they're doing all the right things, saying all the right things. But then at the same time, you know, when the holidays rolled around, my friend who is in, you know, a high position at a company, they were all gifted like 2 incredibly expensive bottles of wine for, you know, Happy New Year, or you did a great job through COVID, let's celebrate. And, you know, there is no sensitivity to the fact that most people would rather have the money in their bank account than an expensive couple of bottles of wine. And 2, it's literally a dangerous thing for some people to drop 2 bottles of great wine at the front door. It's not safe. And, you know, how do we navigate that in that world? And how, you know, it's easy for me as a person who is open about my recovery and out there talking about it to say to management, which is something I do frequently, is saying like, hey, this message has to come from the top. You know what I mean? Like there, you have to be thinking about the fact that, you know, when you have an event or when you do something, like you're going to celebrate something with your team, not everybody drinks. They may not drink because they're in recovery like me, but it may be a religious reason. They may be doing like a dry, you know, sober October or whatever they're doing. They may be training for a race. They may be doing some diet thing, or they may just not particularly love drinking. And you have to make sure that these spaces you create to celebrate, to recruit, to do all these things are just as comfortable for someone who doesn't drink for any reason as they are for people who do. It is not, you know, the idea that, you know, fun equals alcohol has to go. And, you know, it can be hard for us to navigate around in that world. I feel like I'm running on. So Tawny, jump in.
No, I'm like, I'm soaking up all of this knowledge because my, you know, my career before writing, I was a bartender. So like, I've never worked in a quote professional environment like that. So it's like everything was about alcohol. Like the job itself was about alcohol. You get off work and you get drinks, you count your tips and you're drinking. Like it was just so ingrained in right. everything that we did.
Yet there are sober bartenders.
There's sober bartenders and like sober bar owners. And it's like, I honestly, like I do miss bartending. It's really, it's fun. Like I like the mixology and the craftsmanship behind like making these really interesting drinks. I think that's why I'm so interested in the non-alcoholic drink scene because because of that, like I just loved mixing. And if like you're listening and you want to learn more about non-alcoholic drinks, we did a whole episode on the scene with some of our favorite drink options and stuff like that. So if you want to find that. But no, like, so I'm always interested because I've never worked, you know, a 9-to-5, never really worked at an office before. So, you know, in my, like in my day job, like I'm no longer bartending, but like, you know, I still have a day job and there is still this culture of let's grab a drink after work.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just shooting the shit at work. And it's like, God, I could use a drink right now. And, you know, sometimes people are like, will say that in front of me and they're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, it's fine. Like I get it. Trust me, I get it. But it's like, you know, there's also ways to make these types of conversations, make these after work events more inclusive where, you know, like I'm seeing, you know, company Christmas parties offering non-alcoholic drink options other than seltzer or a Coke.
Yes. And also limiting the open bar since Me Too.
Yes. Is that a thing?
Yes, that is a thing.
That's great.
There is a, I don't want to go into like all the details of what's going on in the legal profession because it's not gonna, you know, resonate so much, but there, you know, there has to be whatever the workplace is an understanding from the top and from the partners or the bosses, whoever it is that are going to take people out, that they have to, understand that while they may love, that may be their favorite thing to do at night. And that was how they grew up in the industry. And that was, you know, what everybody did, that it is a different time now. And it is not okay to, you know, pressure people into, you know, like there were, I'll give you, I mean, I was a junior associate in the early 1990s, right? So it was like ancient, but you know, at the end of the day, maybe it was like 8 o'clock or something, a partner would come by our off, you know, my office and be like, hey, a bunch of us are going to go to the bar. You want to go? And the answer was always, yes, I want to go because I wanted to go drink, but also because I knew that was how people bonded. I knew that the people who got better work or got to work with the cool partners were the ones who were in the bar drinking with the partners. And I firmly believe that that impacted my opportunities at the firm and how I was regarded. I mean, again, I'm talking 30 years ago, but, you know, not crazy off the mark here. And I had an office mate who didn't drink, not because she was in recovery, not anything. She grew up in a house where she didn't drink. She just didn't drink and she didn't go to the bar. And her life at the firm looked different than mine because of that. And that is the thing that, you know, that kind of group, or, you know, the non-drinkers are now finally, at least in the legal profession, while they're definitely not like I'm a majority or anything like that, they're ascendant. And I always say that, you know, it is not incumbent upon the person who doesn't drink to make other people comfortable in social situations, right? It is incumbent upon everybody to make, and particularly from the top, to make it comfortable for people who do and don't drink, you know? And a lot of that is, it's not, you know, it's not so hard in some ways. Some ways it's like a real cultural thing, like, hey, don't pressure the associates not to drink, you know? Like, just stop doing that. Like, partners do have to be spoken to that specifically at times. But, you know, but there are things that can be done and are being done. There are, I'll give an example for anybody who is thinking about this in their workplace. You know, my law firm that I left a couple of years ago, I loved, I was there for 15 years, such an amazing firm. And, you know, they had me there helping on, you know, on events, big events that we did. And we did a, celebration of the firm's 100-year anniversary. And it was very fancy. We did it at the Rainbow Room in New York. And it was inviting, you know, all our attorneys, alums, clients. It was a big festive celebration. And, you know, we had gotten into the habit before this happened of always offering, you know, you always do like a signature cocktail at an event, but also offering a signature mocktail. And the mocktail was always like up at the bar if you wanted it. And at this event, there were going to be like 300 people. We were having somebody with a tray of the signature cocktail, which was pomegranate margarita when you walked in. You could get that, or you could get, you know, a glass of champagne or a glass of sparkling water. Well, we decided to also put someone at the door that had the signature mocktail instead of being in the back of the room at the bar and navigating the crowd. And the signature mocktail was a virgin mojito. And we were like so happy and so amazed at how many people grabbed the virgin mojito, right? Because it just had, nobody really was, had thought of that. But when people, we actually had, I had a client say to me, you know, I'm so glad you guys did this, like holding the virgin mojito. Like, this was such a good thing because, you know, I wanted to come to your party and I want to celebrate. And, you know, I felt like I should have a drink, but it's Tuesday night and I have to get on the train after this and go home and help my kid with math homework. I wasn't going to drink tonight. And now, like, this is genius. And it was that easy. You know, it doesn't have
just
to be
just giving people
this,
the option
and normalizing the option. Right? It's not some weird thing at the back bar. It's right up front.
That reminds me of a wedding that we went to where, you know, our friend actually asked, she was like, I want to have a booze-free drink option at my wedding. What would you recommend? So I recommended Curious Elixirs. I was like, you know, this episode's not sponsored. I'm just a big fan of Curious Elixirs.
We just like Curious Elixirs.
Yeah. I was like, they have like five different drinks. They're artisanal. They're really well-crafted drinks. And they're just really easy. Pop the bottle open, pour it on some ice. It's just such a really, it's a nice drink. So she orders a couple cases. And, you know, my partner and I are excited because we're at our friend's wedding and we can have a nice drink that's not seltzer.
Yeah.
And it actually like sold out. Like, I mean, it's, you know, it's free, but like it went out, like, cause like you said, once people had this option, there's like, there's a drink menu on this side of like non-alcoholic drink options. And then on this side, it was, you know, mojito, margarita, whatever. Once people saw that there was these really interesting non-alcoholic drink options, they were gone. And Nick and I were kind of like, well, damn it. What are we
going to
drink now?
No, it's it was true.
Like really, I enjoyed seeing that. Like, because I think that it's so huge because if you give people the option, like you said, it's normalizing it. It's making it seem like, because like if the drink menu just has not alcohol options, right. And then you can kind of feel like the weirdo because you're like, you know what non-alcoholic drinks do you have? And it's like, a lot of people wouldn't ask that. It's just easier to say, I'll take the number one.
Right. Right. No, it's true. And the other thing like that, the other piece of this that it's important is that, like you said, like people are just ordering it because it tastes good and whatever. It's if that starts, you know, as and not, I shouldn't say if that starts because it started, but as that continues to become a thing, people can feel less concerned. You know, I was very concerned when I went back to work after I got out of the detox and I didn't tell anybody what had happened. I went right back to work, but like all these people that I drank with at work would be like, you know, one of my friends immediately said to me when we got out, like, or when I went back to work, like the first day we were outside smoking a cigarette and he was like, we'll go to the bar after work. I'll catch up. And I was like, I can't. And he was like, what? What do you mean? I said, and this was true and remains true. I'm still on antidepressants. I was like, but I said, I'm on some medication now and I can't drink. And he was like, what? Oh, dude, that sucks. And I was like, yeah, tell me about it. But I just, you know, stuck with that with him. And, you know, then he stopped asking. But like the people that I really drank with when I was out, you know, like I felt a lot of pressure around that. And, you know, I've learned now that, and I always tell people, like, no one is entitled to your story. Like, you don't have to explain yourself. If someone is like, you know, at a work thing, hey, what, you know, come on, have a glass of wine. Just say, you know what, I'm not drinking tonight is period, full sentence. No, thanks, I'm not drinking tonight. Full sentence. You don't have to explain it. You don't have to say you're on medication or whatever. You can if you want to. I have no problem with saying whatever is going to help you stay sober in that uncomfortable situation to somebody who is asking something that really is none of their business. But it is... I think as more and more people just sort of normalize the fact that, oh, we're going to, you know, this event tonight, some people will be drinking, some people won't. So, you know, or some people will have alcohol and some won't. And that's not, you know, that looks different to people now after we had that function than it did before, where somebody might saying, oh, you're not drinking, why aren't you drinking? Whereas if it's normal, and I think it is implied. Sort of becoming normal. Yeah.
That's a really good point, because it's like, I feel like if you can either state on the invitation or let people know through word of mouth or something, just say like, hey, you know, we're having a party. We're going to this, or we're going for happy hour at this place. They also have a great non-alcoholic drink menu. We'd love to have you join us. Like, that's a really nice way to invite someone that you know is sober.
Right.
That they might not want to come, just because if you say happy hour, I'm not going to go to happy hour.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
But if you say we're going to so-and-so and they have XYZ, I'm like, wow, you thought about that. That's really nice. And even if like you don't know who's sober, like you can still make the event inclusive by, you know, on the invite stating, you know, drinks served are blank, blank, and blank, so people can know what they're getting into.
Yes, I think that's great. And I also think that, you know, there has to be in these cultures where it is, okay, we just filed a brief, we're all going to the bar. You know, I'm not saying we have to change that because, you know, I think we need to be more intentional about it and think about it more. But again, this is like on management to, you know, if somebody says to you, if you say, come on, we're taking the team, we're going out to the bar, and they say, I can't make it tonight, which is what I would have said as I was in early recovery, what the partner or the boss or whoever it is, the person that is in the power position to allocate work, to make whatever, should then understand that in a sense that, okay, this thing that I'm taking them to, this happy hour, is also going to, you know, be a bonding experience, be, you know, how we get to know each other, how we know each other. The next thing that comes out of that person, that partner's mouth should be, okay, you want to grab coffee later this week? Like, make it so that if you can't, don't exclude the people who aren't on, you know, the party bus because, you know, that's the only game in town. And while I will never forget, the first time I speak at Vanderbilt Law School every year as like sort of a cautionary tale to the first years. They're required to listen to me. Two women came up to me after my talk and were like, listen, we're actually really concerned because we are going to be, we're both in Vanderbilt students in recovery, at which point I almost fell out of my chair that there was such an organization. And we're going to be starting as first year associates at big firms in New York. And we're worried because, you know, what are we going to miss? How are we going to whatever? Mm. And this was early, right? This was when things were this was 5 years ago. And I was like, oh, I know it's going to be hard, but, you know, don't put yourself in situations. You don't have to tell your, you know, anybody why you're choosing not to drink unless you want to. It is, you know, that's a very personal choice. And, you know, I think it's one you really have to think through carefully, how, when, to whom, all of that stuff. But, you know, if you're comfortable enough, it would be great if you could say to the partner, like, I can't come tonight, but maybe we could grab coffee later or grab breakfast next week. And they were like, yeah, that's great. Why? But you know, they're a junior associate. It shouldn't be incumbent on them. Mm-hmm. So it really has to, the culture comes from the top.
This is reminding me of, you know, I'm always rewatching The Office. Like, it's always on a loop in my house. I just rewatched the episode where Andy, Jim, and Karen have to stay late to, you know, work on some deadlines. And Andy and Jim, like, Andy pulls out a bottle of Jaeger and like pass it, like they all take shots, like every, I don't know, whatever, to get through this annoying, like, I have to stay late, it sucks.
Yeah.
So Jim and Andy are taking their shots of Jaeger, and while they're not looking, Karen just pours hers into the trash. But she still has to, like, she still reacts. Yeah. Like, you know, that I just took a shot face.
Right.
She still reacts. So it's like, I think that scene is so telling of like work pressure to drink, being a woman trying to fit into a man's world, trying to fit in through alcohol consumption. The pressure, you know, the pressure of like, you know, he pulls out this bottle of Jaeger and he just assumes everyone's down to drink it.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, like, I don't know that a scene like that would happen now.
And it's spot on, right? That resonated with you because that's like, that's how it happens, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know, like you said, the Me Too movement has really, you know, shown a light on that. And I don't even know that a scene like that would happen now because there's this two men getting wasted and one woman. Like, so I don't know that in a professional setting, I don't know that would work now.
Yeah, yeah. That is absolutely true. So what would you say would be your music minute in this regard?
Well, I mean, just because we're talking about work, I've kind of had Work by Rihanna in the back of my head, as well as Work from Home by Fifth Harmony, and then Work by Iggy Azalea. Those have all been like steady beats in the back of my head.
Oh my God, that's funny.
To be literal.
That really? They have been? I think it's funny that that came up. What came up for me, maybe it's because I'm out of the loop so much on it, but I just kept thinking of Welcome to the Jungle.
That works.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean,
Yeah.
And that is the vibe.
But that's the vibe, right? What we're trying to change is like the fact that you shouldn't feel like, as a person who doesn't drink, for whatever reason you don't drink, that it's this, that there's a strike against you in the workplace. If you think of it from just a logical sort of, does that make sense? It's crazy.
Right? It is. It really is. And it's, you know, it's this question that no matter what our podcast topic is.
Yeah.
It's, you know, a lot of it can be summarized in like, no is a complete sentence.
Yeah.
You don't owe anyone your story.
Yeah.
And it's totally okay to not drink. You can, yes. You don't even have to go to the event, you know, like you don't have to go. And, but you raise a really good point on, the opportunity cost of missing these events, of that networking.
That's the concern. Yeah.
Yeah. I get that.
Yeah. And, you know, hopefully as these events, it's going to take time, but as these events become more to include more, you know, not NA drinks, or to really start getting the generation of leaders that understand the fact that not everybody's a drinker and that it doesn't all revolve around it. That's why it took, you know, given the generation of leaders right now, that's why it took me too, you know, to sort of shake them out of it. But I will close with this last story, which is, you know, it's all hopeful, but it's going to take a lot of work. But I was meeting with with a chair of a very large law firm. And before I was speaking to their attorneys and staff, and he said to me, you know, we have been taking serious steps about, you know, reducing the culture and all of, you know, that the alcohol in the workplace. He said, last year we put in a no shots policy. And that I was like, I'll take it. You know, really? No shots? That's the best you got? But I'll take it. Because I was a summer associate, they would have, they did something called body shots, where literally sitting in the bar, I would be a woman with maybe one or two other women sitting at the table and twice as many dudes. And the male associate would, the partner would instigate that a male associate lick the woman's neck, pour salt on her neck, do the shot, lick the salt off it, and put the lime in. Those were called body shots. And we did them all the time. I don't know how many male attorneys I had lick my neck. I mean, it didn't even occur to me at the time.
See, I've done body shots.
That's like a court case now.
In a bar. Yeah, I mean, that is wild.
That's actionable. Like,
we've done a body shot back in my day.
Yeah.
Was you'd pour the shot into someone's belly button.
Oh, right.
And then
lick
above there, put the salt on there, and then the lime is in the mouth. So, like, you would suck the liquor out of the belly button. Or I guess lick the salt, suck the liquor, and then go up to the person's mouth and get the lime.
Oh my God, it just sounds like such a miserable way to live to me right now. Well, thank you for letting me be on my soapbox today. I appreciate that. And thank you, Andy, for the topic. And until next time. Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. And you can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar.
And it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at LisaSmithAdvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.